يعتذرون من أتاني كربلاء آه كم أعاني هل لكل حين تراب لا زاير يموت وأنا بس أنتظر إمام العصر ترتقي بدموع ونحيب على الحال الفجيع أنا أرض البقيع.
One question regarding Islamic law is about making up missed salats. And 2 points I'll mention tonight. Sometimes people ask, I'm traveling. When I'm traveling, okay, my salat is qasr. I pray incomplete. Instead of 4 rakat salats, I pray 2 rakat. So does that mean when I'm traveling, can I make up my missed salats that I missed at home, in my watan, you know, my hometown, wherever I live? If I want to make up my salats, can I make up my salats that I missed, 4 rakat salats? Can I make them up in 2 rakat? Because now I'm traveling. When I pray 4 rakat salats in travel, I pray them 2 rakat, right? So does that mean if I want to make up prayers that I've missed in the past, that were 4 rakat, I have to break those two into two? The answer is no. You have to make up the salat the way you missed it. So even if you're traveling, and when you're praying Dhuhr, Asr, and Isha in 2 rakat, if at that very moment, after your salat, you want to make up some qada salats, some salats that you have missed in the past, if you missed them when they were 4 rakat salats, you have to make them up as 4 rakat salats. اِقْضِ مَا فَاتْ كَمَا فَاتْ. Make up what you have missed the way you missed it. Vice versa. Vice versa also applies. If when traveling I missed a salat, okay, a 4 rakat salat that I have to pray in 2 rakats, so I owe Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala a 2 rakat salat. If I missed such a salat when I was traveling, now that I'm back home, in my hometown, and I'm praying full, how do I make up that salat that I missed? Same thing again. How did you miss it? What did it look like? What was it supposed to look like when you missed it? Well, it was supposed to be done in 2 rakats. So I'm going to do it in 2 rakats. That's how you make it up. You make it up in two rakats. That's something that usually is asked when it comes to qada salats. And also, another thing that they ask is, I got this question today or yesterday, is that when the salat is qada, when I want to make it up, do I have to do fatha and surah, or can I just do fatha in the first and second rakah? Okay? The answer is, it doesn't make a difference. How did you miss it? What was it supposed to look like when you missed it, if you were going to pray it then? Well, I had to pray it with hamd, with the surah Fatiha, and then after that, I had to do a surah too. Okay, if you had to do a surah, then you have to make it up also with the surah. And so on and so forth. We're talking about how we want to gain dhuhur. We want to gain the return of our imam through Ashura. The blood of Aba Abdullah doesn't allow us to not make big decisions in life. The biggest and greatest, most significant, most important decision that we can make in life is to push forward towards dhuhr. And I explained in other nights that don't think this means that we have to go through some form of extremism. We have to do something different that stands out and no one has done before. No. Okay, I explained how we have to live a normal life with some adjustments. And then I explained how to do that, to be able to guarantee that this is going to happen, what we have to do is we have to go to our ulama and see what they say. And sometimes not only an alim, but more than an alim who has a little bit extra. I talked about all this before. Okay? One of those ulama that we knocked their door and we asked him, And I talked about him yesterday. I gave a little brief, very, very brief, not biography, a couple of the things about him. About how he was the best of his time, Ayatollah Bahjat. This is just an example. I can list names of other ulama who say the same thing. There's a book called Tadhkiratul Muttaqin. Okay? In it are the letters of certain urafa of the ulama that they would send to their students. In it are guidelines, in those letters are certain guidelines for special specific guidelines that not everyone's supposed to do. But when you look at the beginning of these letters, all of them have the same thing in common. Ayatollah Bahjat is just an example because most of us know him more than others. I can tell you Sayyid Ahmad al-Karbalai, the teacher of Allama Qadi, who was the teacher of Ayatollah Bahjat. I can say Mullah Quli Hamedani, Hussein Ali Quli Hamedani, if I'm not mistaken. That's also one of them. All of these great urafa, Allama Tabatabai, and so on and so forth. Great urafa that we've had throughout history. They all say the same thing. Yes, their students, when they act upon what they've said in that letter, you'll see other things as well. But when they've acted upon it, sometimes it takes 20 years to achieve that. What that level, that stage that alim tells you to do, that spiritual mentor tells you to. I could mention all these names, but, and more, but Ayatollah Bahjat is the one that lots of people nowadays know. Towards the end of his life, unfortunately, and contrary to what some say, that he wasn't famous, we don't know who he was. Oh, he was very famous. And that's what hurt him a lot. He didn't want the fame, unlike, mashallah, some out there. The more a tree bears fruit, brothers and sisters, keep this in mind, please. The more a tree bears fruit, the more its branches are down, hang low. If you ever see someone making a lot of noise and trying to gather like followers and stuff, this is a tree that might not have that many fruits, or else if it had fruits, it would bend over and come down and be humble. When you look throughout history, you see ulama were always silent, not saying anything, running away from people and fame, because they want to be with their beloved one. Fame has nothing in it for them. But now you see in this time, it's the end of times, hopefully. I hope we don't have to deal with this any longer, much longer. But you see that nowadays, mashallah, and people fall for it, they come out and it's the one who makes the most noise has the most followers. It wasn't like this before. Right? Everything has changed. I said it in my first lecture. Everything has changed. Brothers and sisters, be careful. Please. Don't get caught up in all the arguments and stuff. From a bird's eye view, look at who has accomplished what. It's very easy to judge. Amir al-Mu'mineen in the Battle of Siffin, they come to him, or it was the Battle of Jamal, excuse me. Imam Ali, we have both sides, great companions. He said, well, look at what the truth is. Don't look at the people. Look at what these people, what have they done? What have they done? Okay, if there's several movements, look from a bird's eye view. See what has been accomplished. Anyway, we began to read one of the letters of Ayatollah Bahjat, one of the few things that he's ever said that has been written, that he has written himself, to see what is in there. He talked, one, about Ummul Kalimat. We talked about that last night. Okay, he said, if you want to know what really counts, okay, what has to be written in gold, what's going to do the work for you, it's this. And we talked about it last time. Which was what? Which was taqwa. And then to support that, he referred to a verse of the Qur'an that talks about the whole aim of creation, which is ubudiyyah, which was also explained last night. Allah created us just to be obedient slaves of His. Khalas, that's it. But no, He created us for spirituality. No, if you are obedient slaves and servants of Allah, slave has negative connotations. Allah doesn't want to look down on us like that. Slave in the sense that you see what He says, He's your master. Whatever He says, sam'an wa ta'atan, for sure I will obey. He created us for this, ubudiyyah. It's going to get us to spirituality. I explained this last night too. And then Ayatollah Bahjat went on to say that for spirituality, for ubudiyyah that leads to spirituality, For ubudiyyah and total servitude, there is no way except through tarikul ma'siyah. But Shaykh, you were talking about dhuhur and stuff. Now you're coming into individual rules and wajib and haram that we do at home. Shaykh, what kind of Shaykh is this that says, for the coming of our imam, we have to go and pray and fast? No, I didn't say it like that, because the greats don't say it like that. Please remember, nothing I'm saying here is because I say it or whatever. No, I'm just trying to transfer what we've learned. Ayatollah Bachchan, when he says tarikul ma'siyah, this leads to that. What he doesn't say, fasting, praying, and doing dhikr and stuff will bring the imam back. No, he says wajib and haram. We have to see what the scope of wajib and haram is. It starts from the most little things out there that we underestimate, all the way to the greater things that we'll talk about, inshallah. Inshallah, I'm going to try to dedicate one night to examples of what is meant by wajib and haram. Because people say, we're already doing wajib and haram, the imam isn't coming. What are you doing? I'm fasting, I'm praying. The more religious ones, they even like pay their khums and zakat and everything. They take care of all of that. But then why isn't the imam coming? So it shows that what you're saying is wrong. Well, maybe it shows that we're not doing it the way it's supposed to be done. Okay, people go to, once again, an example that we can relate to. People go to like these trainers and stuff. They tell the trainer, look, I have a very good diet, but I'm still not losing weight. He says, what do you do? He says, well, I wake up in the morning, I have a bowl of Frosted Flakes, no more than that. And then at noontime, I have like a hamburger, and at nighttime, whatever, this. That's all I have. I'm not eating too much. He says, no, this, that's not what we look at here. We don't look at what you're eating. We look at how many calories are in this. I'm sorry I use these examples. I want to make it more tangible, clearer to understand. What he does is he puts the finger on the calories. We're putting the finger on the food. No, he says, no. What counts and what makes you add more weight is calories in my book. Okay? If you're eating, for example, I don't know, fruit. You're having only fruit throughout the day. Only fruit. Well, fruit is a healthy thing. But fruit is made up of good sugars. Good sugars equals calories. Calories equals, if it's not burnt, if the body doesn't use it, the metabolism doesn't kill it, it means equals fat in the body. So it doesn't matter what you're eating. You thought that you're going by the book, but the book doesn't say it like that. It's the scope is broader than that. It might even cover those things that you think is no problem with it, but there is a problem with it. That's why we go to ulama. They are our trainers, not physical, but spiritual. It's very interesting how it works. Anyway, look at this Shaykh. We have to go find out who the taghut is and make sure we're not doing bay'ah with the taghut. Identify him, the enemy, stuff like that. Because that's what labbaik ya Hussein means. Well, Ayatollah Bachchan looks at you with a fatherly look, and he says, we have to identify the enemy? Yes. He says, let me say a hadith for you. Imam Ali, salawatullah wa salamu alayhi, recite salawat. And another one, please. Imam Ali says, أعدى عدوك نفسك التي بين جنبيك. You want to know who your greatest enemy is? Who is my greatest enemy? Translation of the hadith. The greatest enemy of you is yourself. Yourself. Which is made up of all the desires and stuff, those haram desires. So in a sense, you can say, your greatest enemy are those desires that you have in you. We have halal desires, it's all good. But we have haram desires. أَعْدَى عَدُوِّكْ نَفْسُكْ. Nafsuk, yourself, allati bayna jambayk, that's right here, that's right here. Bayna jambayk means it's right here. Don't look around, look down, or in the mirror. You have to, if you're trying to identify the enemy, look in the mirror. That's where it starts. Okay? And that's where this takes on meaning. Look at this. I want to find the Taghut of my time. I want to find the Yazid of my time. I want to find the Shimr of my time. Look at this saying of Ayatollah Bahjat once again. Let me read off of it. Ayatollah Bahjat says, within every one of us there is a Shimr. Ayatollah Bahauddin Rahmatullah Alayhi, another one of the Urafa, one of the greatest Urafa that we've had. And in parentheses, let me say this. When it is said Urafa, we have two types of Urafa. Theoretical mystics and mysticism, and practical mystics and mysticism, brothers and sisters. If I ever say Urafa, it means the practical ones, meaning the ones that gained Ma'rifah and became Arif through practice, through liya'budun that the verse talks about. No matter how many books you read, you won't get anywhere as long as you don't put it into practice. Theoretical is good, but it's not going to do the work for you. If theoretical irfan leads to practical irfan, then okay. But if it doesn't lead to, your hands are still empty. Action, action, action is all what counts. He says, within all of us there is a Shimr. Ayatollah Bahauddini, who was an Arif, he would say, within all of us there is a Saddam. Same thing. Okay, there is a very bad person. Within all of us there is a Shimr that has the potential to kill Al-Husayn alayhi salam. Our duty is to stop ourselves from being such. Through what? Through what? Through obeying Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, being obedient, being abd of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You want to identify the first taghut? Nafsuka allati bayna jambayk. If you haven't taken this taghut out, not out for dinner, take it out means drop it. If you haven't taken it out like that, then you don't need to find the taghut and fight that taghut. You haven't fought this taghut. When the Hussein of your time comes, Sahib al-Zaman, when that time comes, trust me, and I say this to myself, I will stand in his face. If I'm standing in the ulama's face right now, trust me, when the imam comes, I'll stand in his face. People say, how could the Kufans stand in front of Hussein alayhi salam? May Allah's curse be upon them. Such bad people. I would have never done that. Well, 1300 years, 1400 years have passed. This history has been repeated and related again and again and again. People have done research on it so much, and now you are just reaping the results. Picking the fruits. And now it's so easy for you to say, how could they do that? But at the same time you see that these people, so those people during the Imam's time, it wasn't that clear. It was only clear for those who had taken care of business before. They had gotten rid of the Shimr inside before, so that when Hussein comes, darkness doesn't get in the way of their discretion. That's why you see today also, when people are standing in the face of ulama, sometimes not normal ulama, I'm talking about the greats. You can be sure if this person can't understand to this extent that this is not the thing to do, then this same person, if this person was during the imam's time, he would have stood on Ashura on the wrong side. Why? Why does this happen? I recited this verse last night. The fate of a person who continuously does wrong deeds is that he denies the signs of Allah. But in the beginning, when you tell him you're going to end up denying the signs of Allah, you're going to end up standing in the face of your master, he doesn't accept it. Do you think the Kufans, when they told Imam Hussein to come, do you think all of them were being hypocrites then? When they told the Imam to come? No, they really wanted to come, him to come. But they changed sides because they hadn't worked on themselves before. Who goes to a weightlifting contest and hasn't pumped some weights before? I'm going to this competition. I have to snatch this very, very heavy weight. I've never done anything in my life like that, though. I haven't practiced at all. You'll end up snapping something in your body. You will snap something. If you want to, when those times come, when the going gets hard and the decision making is very, very, very sensitive, you have to make sure that before that you have put it in you. You have to make sure before that you have killed the shimr in you. Oh Allah, you know that when I say these words to my brothers and sisters, I'm one of you. We all are struggling here. We have to work. But Ashura and the blood spilled in Ashura gives us a little bit more motivation. We feel bad. That's why when we walk home, when we go home, our parents get on our nerves and we want to say something. Instead of saying something to them, hurting their feelings, we say very silently to ourselves, Labbaik Ya Hussein, and we go on. Labbaik Ya Hussein is this. With that Labbaik Ya Hussein, I stab the shimr within me. So that when the time comes and the Hussein of my time comes, I don't stab him. You see, it starts clicking. It starts making sense. That's why ulama speak like this. They have walked the walk and then now they're coming and letting us know what's going on. And that's why struggling against the self is called al-jihad al-akbar. The greater struggle. They came back from the battle with the Prophet. The Prophet said, you just put behind you the minor battle, the minor struggle. Be prepared for the major struggle. What is that? Fighting myself again, my desires. More than desires sometimes, peer pressure sometimes. Peer pressure will dictate that you do a certain thing. Say certain things, do certain things. Take off hijab, things like this. I'm strong. They made fun of Abu Abdullah on Ashura. They made fun of him. When they killed Ali and Al-Akbar, they began cheering. They say Abu Abdullah put his face on the face of Akbar. And for moments, they thought that Hussein has lost his life. It's over. They began cheering and making fun. When the peer pressure, of course not physical peer pressure. Physical peer pressure, you go to the authorities. But when people are making fun or like saying something or whatever, that's when you say, Labbaik Ya Hussein. There's a very nice line from one of the ulama I heard. I think I read. He said, don't say 20,000-30,000 Kufans came to Karbala. Don't say it like that. Because if you say it like that, it becomes very situational. It becomes only for that time, the kufans of that time. That's it. It has nothing to do with us. Don't say it like that. He said, say it like what? Recite salawat, so I say it like what? He said, say 30,000 sinners came to Karbala. 30,000 people who had not killed the shimr within came to Karbala. This way it relates to us too. Better be careful. If 30,000 people who can have a shimr in them will do such a thing then, on Ashura, then for Dhuhr, also I have to make sure that I don't have a shimr within. Anyway, let's get to the main topic. Ayatollah Behjat's letter continues. What did we end with? Ayatollah Behjat said to make sure that you have ubudiyyah, that you have total servitude so that you can guarantee the absolute salvation of dunya and akhirah. You have to have ubudiyyah, which equals to tarikul ma'siyah. Staying away from what's haram. Neglecting wajibat is haram too. So from now on, when I say staying away from haram, it means staying away from committing something that's haram or neglecting something that's wajib. Both of them, I mean. Okay. How do I achieve that though again? He says to achieve this in a way that it becomes part of you. And second nature. Some people say if we do that, it becomes second nature. It's not worth anything anymore. For me, not to commit haram because it's become second nature for me. No, no, no. It's the exact thing we're supposed to be after, actually. To be in a way that we start not even seeing haram, to go towards it. It becomes second nature for us. It's actually the opposite. Some people even go too overboard. They say, I have to put myself in an environment that's haram happens there, and then I stay away from it so that that has value. That's not what it is. Ulama say, stay away from haram environments. It's interesting how shaitan has his tricks. To achieve this in a way that it becomes part of you in second nature, the only way, Ayatullah Behjat says, is constant vigilance. Al-muraqaba al-da'imiyya. I'll talk about that. Constant vigilance and alertness, that's one. And two, dhikrullah. And you guys know that I don't like cliche stuff. What does he mean by dhikrullah? Gotta talk about that too. Number one, muraqaba da'imiyya, constant vigilance, being on the lookout. This is something that maybe our ahadith have also talked about and mentioned. Brothers and sisters, when we say that, when Ayatollah Behjat says it has to become second nature, it means that without thinking, you avoid what is haram. Without thinking. That means in your subconscious, you practice this. 20, 30 days you do this, you're good to go. Every single action that I want to do, in my subconscious, I ask myself before. Not that you sit there and actually ask yourself. But for a split second, is this allowed or not? First, you ask. If it's allowed, Bismillah. If it's not allowed, no. I stay away from it. You have to practice this. Because if you don't ask yourself this, lots of times you'll fall into it. After you fall into the sin, then you will say, oh, I made a mistake. No, muraqaba da'imiyya. If you want to make sure that 95% of what you do is not haram, inshallah, and take it up to 100% even if it works, you have to before watch out for it. Example? Okay. Apparently, we have to keep giving examples. Who can watch out for their diet if they just go and eat anything they want throughout the day? You know, nibble at this, take a little bit of that, slowly, slowly, not keeping track. Not asking themselves, okay, how many calories does this have in it? Once again, my apologies for these examples. I just want to make sure that we get the message across, because this is important. I don't lecture too much about this topic, you know, in major events. Here and there, everyone knows I talk about this topic a lot. But I thought that it's a good idea to actually address this here and put it out there. Okay? This is Ummul Kalimat, what I'm saying. Because it's not what I'm saying, it's what the ulama say. It's Ummul Kalimat, it's not your every other day lecture. No, no. Please, this is akhlaq lessons, all of it. I have crammed it into 3 or 4 nights, inshallah, to see what we get, where we get to. Okay? This example is just to make it more tangible for us again. If you snack here and there, you will never, never, never reach that target weight that you're after. You won't. You have to keep track. Ask yourself before, how many calories does it have? Okay, I know I can do 2,000 calories a day, 1,500 calories a day. I know that much. That's my threshold. But when I start nibbling at stuff and I lose track, sometimes the stuff that you nibble at, each one of those nibbles is like 100 calories, man. Before you know it, you've crossed that line again. That's why you have to have knowledge of it before. You have to have knowledge of what's haram before. You have to have learned before. That's why you pick up the risala, amaliyya, you read it. 1 or 2 pages a day. Please, I don't know how to say this. We have to pick up the risala amali and read it 1 or 2 pages a day. And then whenever we have questions, we ask. As I gave you guys this, my story of like 10, 15 years ago, when we had a question, we had to mail it and 3 months later get our answer. Now it's so much easier to be in contact with the offices of great scholars, to be in contact with scholars that we know and have seen and have been with face to face. We've had like conversation with them that know us, that will spend time for us. If we have questions, go and ask. We have to learn what is haram and wajib. Pick up the risala amaliya, start. Sheikh, some of the stuff that we deal with on a daily basis is not listed in there though. Okay, that's where you ask. There's no excuse. So we have to know before, and then ask ourselves, muraqabah, muraqabah, how much does this happen? Is this wrong or right when I'm about to nibble and snack on? Okay? That's muraqabah. Ayatul Bajr says, if you want to make sure that you're doing tarikul ma'asiyah, if you want to make sure you're not crossing that threshold, you have to have knowledge before and ask yourself, every single thing you're doing, every place that you're going, every word that you want to say, subconsciously, you have to be careful before it. And aware, is this allowed or not allowed? Okay? That's number one. Number two, he says, dhikrullah. Okay. Dhikrullah, we must always remember Allah. Let's take the tasbih, you know, the rosary, and start that just saying, saying dhikr. Why? Because Ayatollah Bahjat says. No, no. Look at this hadith. From one of the imams. He says, لا أقول سبحان الله والحمد لله. The imam says, when I say dhikrullah, I don't mean say subhanallah, alhamdulillah, and these things. These are dhikr too, it's not bad. But what does he mean? لَكِنَّهُ ذِكْرُ اللَّهِ عِنْدَ حَلَالِهِ وَحَرَامِهِ. When I say remember Allah, what I mean is remember Him when it comes to the haram and halal. Okay? I ask myself right before, is this halal or haram? This is dhikrullah. And this explains what I said several nights ago, that every breath of ours has to be labbaik, Ya Hussein. And then the question comes up, how are we supposed to do that? Because we can't, when we're breathing, even say labbaik, Ya Hussein. When we're breathing, say dhikrullah. No, no. We can be dhakirullah and say dhikrullah, be saying labbaik, Ya Hussein, with every breath when we are in practice. In practice, doing everything according to the book. The imam says, dhikrullah inda halalihi wa haramih. That's when every second of our life becomes labbaik, Ya Hussein. Because everything we're doing is in accordance with what Hussein wants us to do, with what Lady Zainab wants us to do. We're running short on time. I'm going to leave it here, inshallah, pick up tomorrow night, inshallah. And I ask Allah to give us the tawfiq to be able to wrap this very important topic up, inshallah. Recite the salawat. Assalamu alaykum ya Aba Abdullah. Ya Allah. Brothers and sisters, don't take for granted what you have. Don't take for granted what you have. What do we have? We have the chance to sit in the majlis of Aba Abdullah and to commemorate Aba Abdullah, shed tears for Aba Abdullah. I don't know what I've done in my life that Allah has taken this from me. I used to sit in majalis. I used to be able to sit in majalis. Let someone else tell me what happened on Ashura. I shed tears. I've lost this tawfiq, unfortunately. And my apologies, after I come down from minbar every night, I have to rush out because I have to go somewhere else and also speak there. Okay? It hurts when you can't cry the way you want to cry for Aba Abdullah. Don't take what you have for granted. It's hard to speak about a man like Abul Fadl al-Abbas alayhi salam. Can you pull the light out of my eye, please? Abul Fadl al-Abbas, you can never do justice. And I thank Allah that someone else will be reciting. I don't have to recite because I can't do justice. When we get closer and closer to the end and the enemy is coming towards Karbala, okay, these last few nights, the enemy is coming from Kufa. They're coming, they're gathering. Slowly, slowly, the women and children feel that, yes, this is going to happen. Something's happening. Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas, we can't do justice. Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas, ashja'u an-nas. There's a very nice line of poetry in Farsi that goes I'll just do the translation. He says, I sit and weep. I weep diamond dust for Ashja'u Nas, the most courageous of men. I weep for him. And it goes on and on, and it goes like this. It ends like this. If another Hussein is to come, if another Hussein is to come to this world, which is Imam Sahib al-Zaman, hayhat baradari chun Abbas ayat. Never, never, never will a brother like Abbas come with him. Abbas was one of a kind. Ya Abbas, forgive us, we can't do justice. There will be no brother like Abbas with our Mahdi. Abbas was one of a kind. In Medina, they say Abbas, no one dared even say salam to him sometimes. Why? His parents, did they name him Abbas? What does Abbas mean? Abbas means the frowning one. It's as if Abbas is angry. No, his parents won't name him Abbas. The people call him Abbas. He walks in Medina. He knows what Medina did to his mother Fatima. Yeah, let's call her his mother. Everything Abbas did on Ashura was for his mother Fatima. That's why he frowns. But Abbas, when everyone knows you for your frowning, when everyone is intimidated by you, but at the same time, you are so kind with the children, you spoil the children. Abbas, don't spoil the children. Because on Ashura, when you leave, when Ashura, when they see your head on the spears, what are they to do? Don't take the hearts of the children like that. Abbas is very soft on the inside, but he knows what they've done to his mother and Fatima in Medina. He comes to his brother Abu Abdullah. Everyone has been killed. Everyone has been killed of the Ashab. Abu al-Fadl Abbas comes and says, لَقَدْ ضَاغَ صَدْرِي. Oh master, my heart, I feel like I'm suffocating. I'm being smothered. Can I go to the battlefield now and show these people? Show them and teach them the lesson that they're to learn. But Hussein says, Ya Abbas, you're the standard bearer. You're the flag bearer of my army. If you go, my army falls apart. Ya Hussein, you don't have an army anymore. Everyone is gone. But Hussein will tell you, I still have an army. I still have Abdullah ibn al-Hassan and I still have my 6-month-old. Abbas, if you go, my army will fall apart. They're stuck. Abbas, should he go? Should I not go? My master is upset. I'm the standard bearer. That's when they say Sukayna comes and fixes the problem. Sukayna comes and says, oh uncle, is there any water you can bring us? The water sack. Abu Abdullah, it's as if Abu Abdullah says, thank you Sukayna for helping both of us. We were stuck. Abbas doesn't know whether to go or not. I don't know whether to let him go or not. Thank you, Sukayna. You gave us an excuse to send Abbas out. That's also one of the biggest tragedies of Abbas, because Abbas, when he leaves the tents, he doesn't leave to fight. Abbas leaves with a spear, not a sword, they say. You can't fight the enemy that much with the spear. He still is able to kill many. He rides off. They say before he rides off, he goes into the tent and he sees the children. These eyes are coming out because of thirst. They've seen before Akbar come to the tent and leave. They've seen before Qasim come to the tent and leave. They see Abbas come to the tent. Abbas, oh uncle, are you leaving us too? No, I'm just going to go bring you some water. Ya Abbas. Let me tell you a story. They say when they were renovating the haram of Abu al-Fadl Abbas decades ago, many decades ago, some of those working in the haram, they came to Sayyid Bahr al-Ulum, who was overlooking the project. They said to him, we have heard that Abu al-Fadl Abbas was a warrior. When he would ride the horse, his feet were sometimes dragging on the ground. That's how big he was, how strong he was, what a warrior he was. Abu al-Fadl. Ya Qamar Bani Hashim. But why is it that now that we're renovating his grave, we see that the grave is so small? That's when Sayyid Bahr al-Ulum broke down into tears and he said something that I'll leave for the end of the musibah. Let's flash forward. I'll leave the rest of my brother to recite for you. Let's flash forward to the end. Abbas falls from the horse. Abbas falls from the horse for the first time in his life. He says, Ya Akha, Adrik Akhaq. I've never called you my brother, but I'm so desperate now. The emotions have taken over. My brother, come to me. Wipe the blood off of my eyes so that I see you one last time. Hussein comes over him, sits next to him, wipes the blood off of his face. Oh brother Hussein, one thing I want from you. Don't take me back to the tents. Because Sukaina is probably telling her cousins and brothers and sisters that my uncle Abbas is bringing water for us. Be happy. Our worries are done. Abbas is going to come, but when I come back, they see my torn up body, they will lose all hope that they had. Do you want to know why Abbas's grave is so small? Hussein had to leave his body behind and go back to the camp alone. Hussein comes back and pulls the pole of the tent of Abbas. Sukaina, don't have any hope. I have left Abbas behind. This lion of Allah has fallen. The wolves surround the body. Everyone gets a piece of Abbas. Everyone wants a piece of Abbas. لا أضحك الله سن الدهر إن ضحكت وآل محمد مظلومون قد ظهروا لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله إنا لله وإنا إليه راجعون